This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7pm on 94.9 FM. Or online at joy.org.au/listen live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, stop, format.
Good evening. Welcome to Technogaze, the show where we look into the past, observe the current, and gaze into the future of technology. My name is Mark Powney, and tonight, for the first time in almost a year, I'm going it alone. It's just you and me and our gadgets tonight. So what will be on tonight's show? Well, we really can't let the week go by without acknowledging Apple's new iPad device. So we'll discuss a little on that. And we'll also spend some time going over some of the recent tech headlines. And you may have heard, tonight at 7:30 we'll be crossing over to the live outside broadcast of Joy's first theatrical event, A Day in the Life of Joy, at the Arts Centre. So it's a short 25 minutes I have with you tonight, best to make the most of it. So without any further ado, let's start off with some news. Now, last week, our Federal Minister for Education, Julia Gillard, announced the launch of a controversial new website named MySchool. The site provides users the ability to compare the performance of their child's school with other schools that are deemed to be of a similar socioeconomic rating. The site undoubtedly received a lot of attention, and when made public on Wednesday, quite quickly became inundated with requests from people at home feverishly querying their school's details. Well, that's the line Julia Gillard used when she got up in front of the cameras again on Thursday. She tried to tell us that the fact that the website was intermittently unavailable on the day of its debut was a clear sign, a clear indication as to its popularity and, by reference, the obvious merits of implementing such a site. So Gillard said that the site was built to cope with up to 2,350 hits per second during peak times. Over the weekend, Federal Opposition Leader Tony Abbott got behind Ms Gillard in support of the website and its benefits to our society. However, a number of experts in the web hosting industry have questioned the line, pointing to evidence that the site began its stint of unavailability not long after it launched in the wee hours of the morning. Mark Newton, who works for the South Australia-based internet service provider Internode, said there were no excuses for the government being unable to keep the website online that morning. He was also keen to make the point that his comments weren't representing his employer as such, but based on his own professional opinion. The evidence he cited that it was simply flawed was that the site started to intermittently fail not long after its 1 a.m. launch, which showed that it was flawed in its operation, as it's unlikely with the total number of Australians using the net at that time for there to be enough people to cause, in fact, 2,350 hits per second. When commenting on the problem, Gillard said this website's got the capacity to take 1.7 million hits in 24 hours, and even in the wee hours of the morning, there was some time that it appears that more than 2,350 a second were trying to jump on. It seems that she has forgotten that out of those supposed 2,350 who jumped on, they wouldn't have all been clicking on links throughout the site one per second, would they? Either way, let's hope the Australian government has got its act together and the site now remains fully functional. So that's, I guess, what's happening in the government circles. Now, we're still in Australia, though, with this one, with last week's Australia Day celebrations. Google got into the action with its usual Google logo change, where they changed the logo to include a drawing that fits the day celebrations. The drawing was chosen after a competition named Doodle for Google, in which students were invited to submit work that would represent our Aussie society. The competition was won by an 11-year-old student named Jessie Du, and featured an emu, a koala's head, the yellow circle of the Aboriginal flag, a cockatoo, a wallaby, and a snake, all styled in the fashion that spelled out the word Google. The only problem, however, is when Google placed the image up on their Australian homepage, it was missing the black and red components of the Aboriginal flag, and instead had just a golden sun in the centre. The Twitterverse, of course, exploded with tweets, and Google was forced to comment, saying that the copyright owner of the Aboriginal flag had refused to permit the search giant use of the flag. So what's news to me here is that the Aboriginal flag is in fact under copyright. A Northern Territory artist named Harold Thomas, who lives in Humpty Doo, holds the rights to the iconic black and red rectangle with a yellow circle. In a statement regarding the competition, a Google spokeswoman said, "We were willing to do pretty much whatever we could, but in the end he decided that he just wasn't happy with it." In response, Thomas said that he refused only because Google did not approach him in a respectful way, and they had demanded to reproduce the flag without charge. He continued by saying, "Well, you can use it, but there's a fee component," and the Google person said, "Oh, we can't do that. We can't pay for it. We'll have to ask the girl to change it if we were to pay for it," so he says. So the iconic flag was actually designed by Thomas during the land rights movement of the early 1970s, and it was officially recognised as him being the author back in 1997. It is now covered by copyright and cannot be reproduced without his permission. However, he states that he freely allows it to be used for health, education, legal and other organisations, but he generally charges a fee to commercial entities. Now, you're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9 tonight. Coming up at 7:30 is our very special broadcast, A Day in the Life of Joy, live from the Arts Centre here in Melbourne. I think I might just give you a bit of a crowded house for now. This with more on the Apple's iPad right after this. Now, I've heard somewhere that this company called Apple Inc. released a new device called an iPad last week. That's right, at roughly 5 a.m. Thursday morning local time, the biggest media event of the last 12 months finally came to fruition, and we learned that all the rumours were true. Apple has released its first tablet PC device. Apple are really pushing to tout the virtues of having one company in charge of the entire stack for this device. Quite often, the company is criticised for being control freaks across the entire product, where they control the development of their hardware, the software, and all channels that feed information into it, such as music, movies, and in a first for this device, books. This is a hallmark of the Apple that CEO Steve Jobs has created, and with this strategy, has been somewhat successful in their computer product line, hugely successful in the music player industry, and perhaps game-changing in the mobile phone industry. So what will the iPad bring that is new and exciting? Well, the answer to that is books. The e-reader industry, which has developed so far in the US with a current market leader, Amazon's Kindle, is set to be brought to the masses worldwide with Apple's iPad. The device, with its 9.7-inch display, sturdy and thin design, it fits nicely into any setting where you may find yourself reading a book. And Apple have introduced an iBooks store, essentially the same concept as the iTunes store. It's for music, but for books. So perhaps, like me, you're interested in the technical specifications. Now, it has an LED backlit IPS display, which in fact gives it a 178-degree viewing angle. It has a 9.7-inch multi-touch screen, So it's fully touchable, just like the iPhone. It has less. It's less than 1.5 centimeters thick, and it's styled with a rounded backing similar to iPhone's the iPhone design. Now it weighs just under 680 grams, and it lasts up to 10 hours in battery life. All models do include an 802.11n Wi-Fi capability, and there will be a model that will be 3G enabled, so we will be able to pull data off the net while out on the road. It includes a 30-pin dock connector, similar to the connector used on iPods and iPhones. It has a built-in mic and speaker, and also includes a 3.5mm headphone jack. Inside the device, it runs a custom-designed CPU, which Apple called the A4. They say it has been optimized for performance while also being extremely power-efficient. So the question should probably be asked, is this Apple repeating its own history? And if so, is the iPad the new iPod, where Apple enjoys dominance in the market? Or is it to go the way of the Newton? Now, of course, the Newton was ahead of its time. It had aspirations of providing functionality where the progress of technology hadn't really caught up. And now, Apple's strategy for the iPad, however, seems to fit with their successful implementation of the dominant music industry, the thing that dominates the music industry, I should say, with the iPod. That is, it takes. They basically are hoping to take an existing underdeveloped market, which in the iPad's case is online book publishing, and make it palatable for the masses. This is what they did with the iPod when MP3 players were still niche market items, and the likes of Discmans and perhaps even Walkmans were still in high abundance. Now, one other issue that has surfaced since the announcement of the iPod is that, like the iPhone, it doesn't support Adobe Flash. In an attempt to continue providing a majority of the web has to offer via Flash, there will continue to be a YouTube app built into the iPad, just like there is with the iPhone. By all accounts, however, there is no intention to bring the Flash plugin, I should say, to the iPhone or iPad. Now, reports from a town hall-style meeting held for Apple employees last week are that the reason they've neglected to include the Flash plugin is due to its lack of stability. Apparently, Flash is the highest cause of Safari crashing on Mac OS X. So the same reports say that Steve Jobs is of the belief that HTML5, with its built-in streaming support, will remove the need for plugins like Flash for video content. Andrew Ludwig, who is the group manager at Adobe, who makes Flash, said in a recent blog post, "Without Flash support, iPad users will not be able to access the full range of web content, including over 70% of games and 75% of video on the web." Now, personally speaking, when it comes to my iPhone, I don't really have a problem with the lack of Flash-based advertising that drives me nuts on a PC that doesn't necessarily have FlashBlock installed. So that's, I guess, one of the issues that are facing both iPad and iPhone users. We're discussing the iPad device, which was announced in the wee hours of Thursday morning local time. Now, of course, Amazon.com released the Kindle, which is an ebook reader, back in 2007. It would tap into the vast library of publishers who had already established relationships with Amazon, and there have since been two further iterations of the device. The first removed the SD slot for memory expansion, but added support for 16 shades of grey on the screen. The second iteration added an accelerometer and 2 gigabytes of extra memory to bring it up to 4 gigabytes. And then back in October last year, they released the second iteration to the worldwide market. However, it would seem its popularity has not yet blossomed too far as a result. In fact, recent surveys determined that among young adults, the Kindle doesn't offer all the features they're expecting for such a device. So perhaps this is a market void that Apple are trying to fill with their iPad. Now, of course, on the naming front, the word iPad has brought about a considerable amount of chatter on the interwebs. Perhaps instead of the name iPad, they could have called it the iTampon and had less people sniggering in the corner of their blog posts. But more seriously, on the naming front, it turns out that Japanese technology company and makers of great Australian air conditioners, Fujitsu, already have a device on the market that uses the name iPad. They applied for a trademark on the name back in 2003, which is for a handheld device they created a year earlier that runs Microsoft Windows and allows shop clerks to look up product information. Now, like Apple's iPad, their product has built-in Wi-Fi and Bluetooth technology. Now, the United States Patent and Trademark Office abandoned the application for trademark early in 2009. However, Fujitsu revived the application in June last year, probably based on the rumours that Apple was going to create such a tablet device and deducing that the possible names for it might include the iPad. Now, 1 month later, Apple began the trademark process itself through a shell company so as not to draw too much attention to the possibility of this device. Now, fast forward to now, and Fujitsu have simply said that they are reviewing their options. And if it's anything like what happened with the iPhone, where a similar situation ensued with a Cisco product device of the same name, they will probably settle on a fee and put in place an agreement where both companies can use the name for their respective products. And while we're on the topic of names, German company Siemens has a product named the iPad, under which it sells motors and engines. And a Canadian lingerie company uses the name for, wait for it, padded bras. And just when you thought that's obscure enough, another Japanese company sells a product that, when transposed to English, sounds like the name iPad. This product is, in fact, an adult nappy, which, in true Japanese style, automatically alerts a carer via wireless technology when it is soiled. You're listening to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9 tonight, a shortened show for you tonight with just myself, Mark Powney. Now, that's all I have time for on this abridged version of the show. As always, you will be able to download this show as a podcast from the Technogaze page at joy.org.au/technogaze.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM. Or online at joy.org.au/listen-live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.